Support for Spookfound Spotlight is provided by the City of Maryville, featuring a conference center at Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, offering a destination for wedding receptions, parties, reunions, and more. Details on availability and accommodations are at mazingolake.com. And from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing in Maryville, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years. Kawasaki has employment opportunities available now for all three shifts, weekends, and full and part-time. For more information, KawasakiMaryville.com.
Welcome back to Spookfound Spotlight here on KXCV. KRNW, I'm your host, Jeremy Werner, joined alongside with Maryville R2 Superintendent Dr. Logan Lightfoot. I don't want to jump the gun, but month into the school year, and it kind of already sounds like you had your longest Board of Education meeting of the year in September.
We definitely did. And I would say probably one of the longest in my career. But long, but really good. There were a lot of things we needed to talk about. So we had a regular board meeting. And once a year, we actually do our board meeting in the Performing Arts Center. And that is when the undergrads that are education majors at Northwest come by and they actually watch our board meeting. And so we did held our regular board meeting. And then after that, we did a little question and answer session with education majors, which, by the way, was phenomenal. It's so fun to see from my seat the 150 young people sitting in the crowd that are aiming to become teachers. And Jeremy, we've talked about it on the show before. It's tougher and tougher to find teachers. And the ones I met last night, wow, I like the number of them, but also just the questions they asked, how engaged they were. Those kinds of things give me a lot of optimism. But we had that, and then after we wrapped up with that, we had a work session with our school board, and I presented phase one of our long-range facility plan, and then we had a couple of representatives from LJ Hart talk to us about our financial standing in the district and what it might look like if we potentially ran a no tax rate increase bond issue this next year.
Okay, and how receptive was the board to all of that?
I would say very receptive. We've done a great job over the last several years of putting ourselves in a really good position financially. Our fund balances are very, very strong in our operating budget. Fund four, so our building budget, also very strong there. We've done some strategies over the last year to maximize just on some, bond purchases and things like that, to where we can kind of grow our money that doesn't come at the expense of taxpayers. And so we've done some things that I think have really put us in a good position. And we're in a position to look at April to potentially run a no tax rate increase bond that would kick off our phase one and just really do some great things in our school district.
And, speaking of the phase one, I was looking at the Board of Education meeting, not minutes yet, but the agenda, and one of the things that stuck out was all these different bids. I believe it was like three or four bids out there, and those come to a close at the end of this month. Is that something that the board is going to look at next month?
Yes, that's correct. So we do have a couple of RFPs, request for proposals, out right now. And the reason we're doing this, Jeremy, is we really want to get kind of ahead of the game. And when you talk about cost of construction, you talk about inflation and things like that. If you're going to do a building project like we're talking about doing, we want to be as responsible as we can be with our taxpayers, and being able to be ready if we take an issue to the voters in April and they approve that. We want to be able to start engaging some of our biggest projects right away. So that way we can kind of capture the market a little bit. Our construction costs will hopefully be able to stay, not jump up, if we had to wait 6 or 7 months or something like that. And that also helps to put us in a good position to do some great remodeling and have our kids and teachers be ready for a brand new looking building. So we want to get started on that. What you're referring to on those RFPs, one of the ones that probably one of our most important ones is we're looking for a construction management company. And with the complexities we're talking about, we have a lot of opportunities throughout our district to improve our facilities. And we've got to get a very good construction management company on board with us to be a partner with us through that. And so we're going to open those responses in a few weeks, and we'll discuss those, and I'll have a recommendation for our consideration for our board at the October board meeting.
Okay. And so I assume, all lumped in with phase one and just like general maintenance and all of that. You talked about inflation. Does locking in a bid now kind of quell inflation if it does continue to, you know, increase throughout the coming months?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's kind of our idea. And there, okay, you know, there's nuances and exceptions to that rule. But generally speaking, the further ahead you can kind of get in the process with having your shop drawings done, having bids put out, getting a price locked in earlier, that would certainly in theory help us with that.
Okay, well, good. So I don't want to, you know, keep rehashing last night's meeting, because I'm sure that, based on how long it sounds, I don't think you want to, you know, just keep going, okay, well, yeah. So one of the things I noticed that was discussed was Senate Bill 681. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about that. I know we talked about it a little bit beforehand, but it sounds really interesting. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the legislature adopted this, and it went into law this last year. And basically, the spirit of Senate Bill 681 is to really encourage and support school districts throughout our state to help students that are struggling readers. And so really it's all based around literacy. And so one thing I really, you know, Maryville, we have a little bit of an edge, because the things that the bill requires, there's a lot of things we're already doing with our kids. And so kind of what the bill is going to look like that first year is any student that's in a school district, kindergarten through third grade, or any student that is new to the district, kindergarten through fifth grade, needs to go through what's called a universal screener. And so that's some kind of an assessment to kind of see where you are in terms of your reading fluency, your overall literacy. If a student does, you know, find a test low in that, we have another screener we give them that really kind of dives down and, well, is this comprehension? Is this fluency? What specifically is that student struggling with? From there, what we'll do, it'll be in grades K through 3, if we do have some struggling students, we'll go ahead and write what's called a reading success plan. And that is kind of a coordination between regular ed teachers, some of our interventionists, and some of the new ones. I think I talked about that last summer, that's one of our goals, is to provide intervention support. So those folks will get on board. We'll write a reading success plan for that student, and then probably sometime in October, around parent-teacher conferences, have a chance to talk with parents about what that success plan looks like, how parents can actually help at home to support readers. I mean, I say struggling readers, but any reader, but how parents can help at home if a student struggles in a particular, you know, phonemic awareness or whatever the case might be, how that student can go home at night with a parent and they can support them. And really the whole idea is to, you know, basically graph a student's progress and get that student up to grade level, you know, as quick as we can.
Okay. It sounds like, and I'm going to try and summarize it as best I can, but, you know, it sounds like, you know, the R2 school district already has, you know, great literacy rates, but this is one of those things where it's like, you know, it's kind of like any program where there's going to be those that lag behind, and it's really no fault of the teacher or anybody else. It's just, you know, these things happen, and this bill is kind of like, okay, well, you know, let's try and boost them up to all the other different levels. And it's a multi-pronged attack of, you know, not only the school district, but ensuring that the parents at home know about this issue and the ways that they can handle it. Is that like a good summary of it?
Yeah, 100%. And that's, you know, it's, I'm a former reading teacher myself, and I love the idea of getting kids assessed early, because the earlier in a student's life that you get that student, you know, identified that they might be struggling in a particular area of literacy, the easier it is to bring that student up. And so us focusing on those primary grade levels, and we have over the years done a lot of those screeners already. So our teachers are in a position where they know those things. They know how to interpret data and those kinds of things. But really, this is exactly what you said. It's a process to really, you know, put on paper how we're going to support each individual student. And so I think it's going to be a very good thing for our kids. It's, of course, you know, when you talk about work, it's a little bit extra work, but boy, is it well worth it. If you can bring a kid up to their, you know, have them reading at grade level, by the time they hit middle school, high school, that student's chances for success, even post-secondary, just go way up.
You know, I was going to add, you know, I'm not a teacher or anything, but, you know, in terms of, you know, you said it's a little bit extra work, but I always feel like a little bit extra work is saving yourself work down the line.
Great way to put it. Absolutely.
Yep. Because it might be a little bit of extra work at the front, but then you don't have to worry about later down the line going, ooh, now they're really far behind, or ooh, I have to like now focus on this on top of everything else I'm doing.
You bet. Yeah. And, you know, the advantage to elementary is when you've got a student that, you know, that really needs help in a particular area of reading and literacy, elementary teachers have that student for so much longer, you know, whereas when that student gets to high school, if, you know, we didn't identify something or that student's still struggling, you know, that student might see his or her English teacher for, you know, 50 minutes, 49 minutes a day. And that's just the luxury of time you have in elementary is so much more than when the student gets a little bit older.
Okay. And so on the flip side, there was something else we had talked about looking more towards high schooler students, junior and senior students when it comes to their educational path, where it's something where, well, I'll let you explain it.
Yeah, you bet. And so we actually, at our board meeting last night, went over some of the superintendent areas of focus. And one of the areas of focus that I'm going to have this year is Maryville's, it's a unique place. And what I mean by that is, you know, we're in the middle of, you know, we're in Nottoway County, so we're not necessarily really close to a Kansas City or an Omaha or things like that. But our opportunities for growth are, when I say growth, I'm talking about commerce, I'm talking about business and those kinds of things. We have a lot of resources in this town. And so really what we're looking to do, and we've started this as a leadership team, is what can we put in for programming at the secondary level that might potentially expose a student to a career path or a major that student might really have a talent for, have an interest for. And it's a lot different than your traditional 7 periods a day. And so kind of what we're looking to do is, you know, if we have those juniors and seniors, that age of student, if we get a program like this, it'd be a partnership with school, university, and town. And when I say town, that would be like our business community, to where we would have willing partners that would kind of help us. And we would, if students wanted to take this particular course, I'm going to use the example of a student that might be interested in marketing. So if that student might be interested in marketing, that student might spend his or her first couple of hours, rather than in a traditional classroom, we actually send that student to maybe a small business to maybe help with a marketing plan, executing the marketing plan, running a social media platform, all those kinds of things. And in this semester-long course, that student just gets so much real-world experience. When I describe that, you might think internship, and there's certainly a piece to that. But with the way, you know, the program we're looking at, it's called CAPS, and CAPS is there, some in Kansas City. I did it when I was in Nebraska, but it really is such a unique thing because it puts students in like I say, those real-world situations and working through real-world problems. But at the end of their course, they do what's called a capstone project. And rather than when you get done writing a 5-page paper about what you liked and didn't like, kind of the charge there is they work on this capstone project all through their course. And by the time they're done, they have a project that's completed that adds value to the community or adds value to that particular business. And so, you know, a student can put that on a resume, a student can put that on a college application, but it really does help our community. And this kind of program really also long-term goal seeking. We want to graduate great students, but we also want those great students to come back to Maryville and raise families here and, you know, have good paying jobs and be able to contribute to our community. And this is just a way that we can maybe hopefully stimulate some of those kinds of things.
Yeah. One of the things I find, you know, really great about that is I think about what it was that I was interested in high school. And it is completely different from what I'm doing now. So I
sure
feel like in some ways you might have that student who goes into a field and finds out, I kind of had this pipe dream and maybe it's not really for me. And then that, you know, backup plan like comes to the forefront. And then they think about that, try that. And then it's like, oh, this is me. And it mm-hmm. clicks all the, because my whole thing in high school was like, oh, I kind of want to be a psychologist or a high school history teacher. And is that a boy thing? I feel like most guys at some point feel like they want to be a history teacher.
I think you might be right.
Like that just feels like, because there was some social media trend recently where women were asking their husbands and partners, how often do you think about the Roman Empire? And a lot of guys were like, I don't know, probably every day. once a week. And I was just kind of like, that is a, it is kind of like a weird thing, guys. Just history. I don't know.
I would agree. Yep.
But I see that. You know, going back to the thing, it sounds like, you know, it is great because, you know, it not only gets either a head start or it does, you know, tell them, oh, so this idea I had maybe isn't the idea I should have.
You got it. Absolutely. And that's the beauty of a program like that. It gives students choices. And so, I mean, I would be in the same boat as you. At 16, I had no idea, you know, what I wanted to do and that kind of thing. But it gives students, they get exposure to a couple of different types of industry, a couple of different types of business. And kind of at the beginning of the course, they do a little bit of traditional classwork to work on soft skills, to work on those kinds of things that kind of are a little bit harder to come by these days.
Yeah. Well, I guess, you know, looking at everything, it sounds like, Board of Education meeting this month was crazy. It sounds like a lot was discussed. So, yeah. I guess overall, how has the first month or so of school gone?
Gosh, we talked about this off air a little bit. I could not have scripted a better first month of school for our kids and teachers. And that is 100% tribute to the folks we have in our school buildings. I mean, we were able to bring in some really good teachers last year. We retained some great veteran teachers, and it's been a solid start. You know, we were able to get in, and, you know, I think last year we had issues with transportation and buses and those kinds of things. Full slate of bus drivers. We've got, you know, we're humming. I mean, there's certainly things that we can always improve on, and we certainly do want to do that. But overall, just the student experience at Maryville R2, we're off to a great start, I think.
I think that's a real testament to, you know, not only leadership from your end, but just like all around, because there were so many fresh faces in terms of the not superintendents, but principals of the middle school and high school, and just all these different, you know, kind of, and I guess, you know, some of that probably goes back to all of the meetings over the summer to kind of get this cohesive, you know, foot forward, right?
You bet. And that's something we work on and we'll continue to work on. We've got, as a leadership team, you know, we have to have our common values for sure, but we want to really put the district and put our kids in a really good direction. And we've got some building principals and some building directors that they are, I mean, it sounds cliche, but they're kid first. And, you know, if there's something that's going to add to the student experience or be good for kids, I have seen time and time again them bend over backwards to make sure it happens.
Okay. Now, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask these next two things. So I'll start with the one that is kind of still fresh on everybody's mind, homecoming. This was the first year for a homecoming parade. What kind of spurred that? I know when I first heard that, I wasn't someone who was into homecoming, so I guess I never clicked in my brain before, but I was like, really? This is the first time for a parade up here.
It is, and back to what we just talked about, this is completely student-driven, Jeremy. It was a really neat thing to watch from my seat. We had a group of high school students that submitted a proposal to Mr. Alvarez and Mr. Groh, and it's something we haven't done yet, but we haven't done in the previous years, but they really wanted to do it and kind of maybe potentially start a new tradition. And that's one thing we'll sit down in about a week or so and kind of rehash things that went well, things that, you know, we could work on. And if it's something we want to do moving forward, we might do it again, expand it. But I like the fact that, and I've used the high school as an example, but there's a lot of student ownership in our buildings. And I mean, of course, you have adults that run it, but, you know, if there are some things that students really, you know, they want to try, they want to do, that they feel like would add to the environment or add to the culture, that kind of thing, we're certainly all ears.
Okay. And so the second thing, not as fresh on everybody's mind, well, maybe, I don't know, but I feel like it was definitely the talk of the town was the St. Pius game.
Oh, yeah.
Were you at that?
I was, yes.
That was a heck of an ending.
Oh, what a game. I mean, and that's, I don't know. When you think about high school football, like, could you find a better night, a better game, a better crowd that just completely epitomizes what great high school sports and experience looked like? I mean, the whole night, it was fun to watch. You couldn't hardly sit down because the seats were packed. Our band put on a great halftime performance. We had, you know, new single game passing leader, new single game receiving leader, all those things. But it was a total team effort, and I mean both sides of the ball. And the St. Pius kids played very, very hard too. I mean, it was one of those games that could have gone either way. And What a fun night. It was awesome.
It was a slugfest, and I know some fans, and even talking with Matt, who calls the Spoof Hound games here on KXCV, I think a lot of people are kind of expecting round two later this year.
Well, that can certainly happen.
I don't want to say knock on wood, because that'd be a tough game, but
yeah.
I feel like, any postseason game is going to be tough.
It will be, but, and you're 100% right. There's a decent chance. I certainly don't want to look ahead or anything like that, but, if our boys keep playing the way they have been, and I'm sure St. Pius will do the same thing, there's a decent chance we meet again in the district championship, and boy, what a fun rematch that'd be.
Okay. Well, anything else going on around a district you'd like to talk about?
I say this about every month. It's just such a great – it's a great time to be in Maryville R2 and a great time to be a Spoof Hound.
Okay. Well, I know by the time we meet next month, it'll probably be a lot cooler and things might be a lot different. But we'll go ahead and skip now to the part of the show, better know as Superintendent, where I pull a bunch of random questions. And so I kind of thought, I'll save some of the Halloween-y kind of spooky season questions for next month. But I kind of wanted to ask what the most... And because this is fall, it's sometimes people's favorite season, the changing of the leaves. But what's the most beautiful place you've, ever been to and seen with your own eyes? And, while you think about it, I think back to, I can't remember, I was maybe 14, 15, but my parents, it was on their bucket list. And now it's kind of on my bucket list to go back because of just all the memories I have from it. But Yosemite National Park is just, God, it is gorgeous. It's amazing to believe that just something like all these iconic natural structures, Half Dome, these waterfalls, El Capitan, all these things are just in one park. Like, it's a very gorgeous area, and it's just very... If you really want to feel like you're in the middle of, not necessarily nowhere, but in the middle of just like pure nature, that is the park to go to, I think.
I have heard that, and I've never been, but I've exactly what you described is kind of what I've heard too. So I've heard it's beautiful up there. I'll stick with a place that I've lived. We moved here from Maryville, from the Sand Hills in Nebraska. And most people probably don't, when they think of Nebraska, they think of very flat and they think of a lot of corn. There's an area in central and northern Nebraska, they call it the Sand Hills. And that's actually where we lived for 4 years. And, I've got pictures on my phone. I use the screensavers and that kind of thing. I think it's probably the most beautiful place I'll probably ever live. It really kind of looks like rolling mountains and those kinds of things. And it just, when you're out there, and it was very rural. I think the cows outnumber the people 8-1. But it was just such a gorgeous place. And you didn't have a lot of the street lights and those kinds of things. But boy, what a fun place to be. And I was pretty excited for my kids had a chance to live there when they're younger, because I'm sure they'll have great memories of that as they grow up too.
Is that one of those places where there's just no light pollution whatsoever?
None. And that funny you mentioned that. We were our first year up there, we had driven to visit some friends of ours that didn't live too far away, and I remember turning my car off, and the lights went off, and it was just pitch black.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I there's something about that. I think, I'm sure like 100 years ago, humans did not like that in the Midwest, but we're so just bombarded by just unnatural light that when we just are without it, it's kind of almost relaxing in a way.
I would totally agree. Yes.
So I would encourage anyone, and unfortunately, not to say anything bad about Maryville, but you got to go pretty far north of Maryville to just get that feeling.
You definitely do.
Like, you truly have to be in just nowhere land.
Yeah. Love the Maryville vibe. And, we have such a unique community. But, boy, just being out, really in the literally in the middle of nowhere, there's something therapeutic about it, I think.
Oh, yeah. Last time I did that was maybe Colorado. And the Airbnb we were at, I was like, just turn off all lights. I just want to look outside. So, the... Next question I have, I guess this is also the time of year I recently went to a concert. But my question is, what is the best music concert you've ever attended?
Oh.
And for me, and I've seen this individual perform at least 10 times, it is Weird Al Yankovic. It is
really
easily one of the best shows I've ever seen. I've seen him with an orchestra. I've seen him with... his usual stick is just like a ton of costume changes. And because of those costume changes, there's all these random sketches in between. He just has all these just unique jokes every tour that he does on stage where he goes, well, it's time to introduce the band. And then he starts introducing band members to each other. Just like silly, dumb things like that. You know, the shtick that he does have. And I've seen him where he just kind of does an unplug thing, acoustic guitar. Like, he's a very unique performer. And he's not shy about, you know, stating the obvious. Like, at the unplugged one, he basically called it the vanity tour. Because there was no costumes or anything. He's like, you're just showing up to see me play, I guess, because you love me that much.
I bet his concerts are really good. Like, that, I would have never thought to go see him live, but... I bet it's a great concert.
Oh, it's when he played with an orchestra, his cover of Amish Paradise was probably the best I'd ever seen. But the thing he did that I thought was really genius was, you know, he had like this 100-piece orchestra with him, but he let them perform their own thing before he went on. And that
That's
was really,
really cool.
Oh, yeah. It was really great because you almost got like a classical show. They played like Jurassic Park theme at the end of their set. But, you know, and he even changed up the whole let me introduce the band by, let me introduce the orchestra, and then he introduced the triangle guy first, and he's like, well, we've run out of time. So definitely what I would say is like the best concert I've attended. And I've attended a lot of shows, and there's definitely a lot of performances, like, I would almost put U2 up there. I'm not a big U2 fan, so I won't say it's the best, but they were really good live.
I bet. Yep, I bet. Gosh, for me, I would say, so this is interesting. My wife and I, when we first got married, she's a teacher, but her undergrad was in marketing and PR and things like that. So she had a side hustle, and she worked for, you know, kind of part-time for a country radio station in Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
And part of that gig was she would go to all the concerts that got put on by this particular, you know, radio station. And anyway, so I got to see a lot of really cool acts and things like that. Let's see, but really kind of, there's two that stick out to me. One I wouldn't say was the best, just unique. In St. Joe, I don't know if you knew this, in the early 2000s, before Taylor Swift got huge, Taylor Swift performed in St. Joe.
Wow, really?
Like, for a free concert in a park.
Really?
And we went and saw her. And so I can say I've seen Taylor Swift. Actually, we ran into her at the grocery store like earlier that day, her and her mom. Craziest
wow.
thing. Yeah. Anyway, so that's...
I assume it was not like a four-hour show. Like
it definitely
was. She did
wasn't.
Arrowhead
no.
this past summer.
I think she only had a few songs she played, but anyway, we would have never figured that she would become that. But that's pretty awesome. But I would say, honestly, my favorite concert that I've ever... And it was... I mean, you wouldn't think so, but James Taylor... And went to watch him, and he, kind of what you described, Weird Al, he came out with himself and a guitar and just played for hours, and he was awesome. Mm-hmm. I mean, just not the, you know, not like a rock band or anything like that, but just played great music, and it was great. So I'd probably say James Taylor.
Wow. Yeah, it's kind of, you know, it's sometimes musicians you really don't expect when it comes to, like, performances, and because I am just not a Kiss fan at all. But they put on a pretty good show.
I bet they put on an awesome show. Kiss is great.
Yeah. So, well, see, like, that's the thing, though. Like, you think, like, I didn't think they're great. I'm like, okay. And I show up, I'm like, oh, that's pretty good. I'm still not going to go home and listen to Kiss, but that was a good show.
Yep.
There's just something about, I don't know, there's something about live performances. Like, I don't listen to Willie Nelson in my free time, but if someone's like, hey, you want to go see Willie Nelson? I'd be like, yeah, sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep.
Because there is something about not only seeing the classics, but kind of the icons.
Yeah.
Especially, you know, before they pass.
That's for sure.
Which, yep. Willie's still touring in his 90s. I don't know how.
Hey, whatever he does, Willie's the man.
Him and Keith Richards, somehow they're still ticking despite all those drugs.
Yeah, it'd be great to see for sure.
Well, I guess that would be it. Anything else you'd like to add, Dr. Lightfoot?
No, I'll just encourage. I mean, I would say over the next several months, you know, if we really choose to kind of move forward with our phase one and what that looks like with facilities, we'll certainly roll that out to our public probably about January or so, and want to give a couple of months to, you know, kind of go through our community and show kind of what our plans look like and how it would best benefit kids. So I guess the theme would be stay tuned.
Support for Spoofound Spotlight comes from Kawasaki Motors Manufacturing, producing gas-powered engines for lawn and garden equipment for over 30 years, thanks to the workforce at its Maryville plant. Employment opportunities at Kawasaki are available now. For information on careers, kawasakimaryville.com. Also from the City of Maryville, home to Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. Golf offerings at Mazingo Lake include the Seacrest 18, the Watson 9, and golf simulators open year-round in the Conference Center. Details on tee times are available at mazingolake.com.